And welcome in to the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. We are live from Duncan out at 326 Harding Place. We're going to be out here all show long, Adam Vingan and myself. Come on out. We've got some coffee. There's some donuts. We've got some giveaways out here. So 326 Harding Place down in South Nashville. We'll be out here all show long from 6 to 9 a.m. Adam Vingan, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. You won't be able to miss us if you are driving down Harding Place. We're right outside. You'll see the big 102.5 The Game tent.
We're almost in traffic. We're almost causing delays.
You're going to hear some ambient traffic noises.
There's already almost been like two wrecks out here. We're keeping our head on a swivel, as our friend Terry Crisp would say.
Right. So, anyway, you come see us. We're right out here. Get yourself a donut. Get yourself some coffee. Get yourself some giveaways. Yes.
Absolutely. 326 Harding Place. We'll be out here all show long. We got a lot to get into on the program itself here today. Zach Lyons from Football and Other F-Words will join us at 7 o'clock. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. And then our weekly visit with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports from 8 to 8:30. We got a lot to get into with Charles. The Aaron Rodgers situation in New York continues to be interesting. So we'll get into the NFL headlines with Charles coming up at 8 o'clock. We begin with Game 3 of the NBA Finals. And, Adam, I got to say, you know, I have, and we've talked about this on the show before, I'm somebody who generally likes the NBA. Like, I'm an NBA fan. I've been a Miami Heat fan for a while, ever since Shaq came over back when he and Kobe split from the Lakers. So I've been watching the NBA for a pretty good while. And I generally speaking, really enjoy the playoffs. The regular season, I will admit, even as an NBA observer, has become pretty difficult at times to watch when it relates to the load management and just the way the NBA regular season goes. It's become a little bit of a problem here. The playoffs generally, though, are pretty good. The playoffs this year have sucked in the NBA. They are awful. And look, the Celtics, I think, are clearly the best team. I think they've clearly been the best team all year. So congratulations to them. They're going to win the championship. They're now up 3-0. No team in the history of the NBA playoffs has ever come back from a down 0-3 in a series. So it's over. The Celtics are going to win, and they're going to be the NBA champion. It is a shame that we've not really gotten a great final to this point. And I think the NBA playoffs as a whole have been incredibly underwhelming to this point.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I can't recall any super compelling series in terms of what actually happened in the series. In terms of matchups, there have been compelling matchups, but in terms of how the series have played out, I can't recall one immediately. But to your point, last night when I finally was able to sit down and watch Game 3 between the Mavericks and Celtics, it was a one-point game in the second quarter. You know, I came back to it late in the third quarter or the fourth quarter, and it was a 21-point lead. It was 91-70 for the Celtics. So I said, you know what, I'm not going to bother watching this, and ended up watching something else, but then coming back and seeing that the Mavericks had, to their credit, cut the lead to single digits. They went on a 22-2 run in the fourth quarter to make it, I thought it was going to be a compelling end to the game. But then it seems like that's what's happened a lot in the series is the Celtics get up to a big lead. The Mavericks claw back into it, make it single digits, make it a couple of possessions, and then the Celtics immediately push it back up to double digits, multiple possessions. So you're right. The history of the NBA suggests that the Boston Celtics are going to win the NBA championship, which I mean, I don't think anyone would be surprised by that. They've been very good all year. But yes, I'm like you, Robbie. I'm a big basketball fan in general. I'm more of a college basketball fan than an NBA fan, but I do enjoy the NBA. I will watch NBA games, and I do like to tune in during the NBA playoffs. But, yeah, this postseason hasn't given me a lot of opportunity to say, oh, my God, I got to turn this game on and stop what I'm doing.
No question about it. And, look, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the Celtics because they have been excellent all year. You know, they got put out in the Eastern Conference Final last year by my beloved Miami Heat. And I think this has been kind of from the start a little bit of a retribution year for them. So Jaylen Brown has been outstanding. He's probably going to be the finals MVP. You've got Jason Tatum. You know, they're loaded. You know, and Drew Holiday's there. They've got a loaded squad. So they certainly deserve credit. Hey, look, I mean, they have rolled through the playoffs. I mean, when you look at it, it's going to end up being one of the most dominant runs to a championship in the playoffs in history, just because of how well they've played and the path that they've had to get here. I mean, they're just a really loaded team. But, you know, I was wondering about this last night, and I tweeted it out. Playoffs just haven't been good. And it feels like, and I know we live in Nashville, in a market where there's not an NBA team. We've got Memphis 3 hours to the west of us, and I know that there's a decent contingent of Grizzlies fans here. But for the most part, I mean, the NBA is not something that we talk about a ton on our radio show, on our radio station, because, quite frankly, like, we don't get a ton of people asking to talk about it. So, like, it's out of sight, out of mind a little bit anyway in Nashville, but it does kind of feel like, just generally speaking, there's not a lot of buzz right now for the NBA playoffs. I just haven't quite felt the same as I normally do as your casual sports consumer watching it so far this postseason.
And this was, on paper, a great matchup. You know, the Celtics, a great team. The Mavericks have been a compelling story in the second half of the season. A lot of star power on both sides. Another thing that hurt the game yesterday, Luka Doncic fouled out for the first time in his postseason career. He picked up 4 fouls in the fourth quarter. So with him out of the game in the final 4-plus minutes, I believe it was, that kind of took the air out of the sails. You know, being able to watch them make a comeback with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving on the floor would have been a lot more exciting than just Kyrie.
Yeah.
So that didn't help either. But all told, you're right. It feels like, despite the TV contract negotiations that are going on with the NBA and how much the NBA stands to make when all of that is formalized, the interest doesn't seem to be there. Now you turn on ESPN, they're talking about it a lot because obviously they're carrying the NBA. They're carrying the NBA finals, or ABC is at least. So there's a lot of talk there, which would give you the idea that the NBA, you know, is front of mind for a lot of people, but. The NFL mini camps have been this week. The Stanley Cup final is going on, also on ESPN's air. And we're both hockey fans. We live in a hockey market, so maybe that's why we feel that that's been more compelling than the NBA finals. But even for someone who really enjoys basketball, I haven't been glued to the television really at any point during this postseason.
And game 3 of the Stanley Cup final is coming up tonight. Edmonton will host the Florida Panthers. Florida up 2-0 in the series, and we'll see what Alex Barkov's status looks like for tonight.
Looks
like he's going to play. He took the hit late in the game from Leon Draisaitl in game 2, and I assume it was concussion protocol, but we'll see what happens there. But we'll see if Barkov is available. Kind of an interesting development. So there's been a ton of rain and storms in South Florida. So Edmonton got out of there, I guess, on Tuesday.
They left on Tuesday.
And got back to Edmonton and got back home. Florida attempted to leave early yesterday and got stuck. So they got stuck at the airport, got stuck with the weather being what it is in Miami. They didn't get out of there until, like, yesterday afternoon and didn't get to Edmonton. I mean, we talked about this. It's 2,500 miles between Sunrise, Florida, and Edmonton. That's a heck of a long flight. So they didn't get into Edmonton until late last night. So you don't typically see it go that way in the playoffs, specifically in the Stanley Cup final, where the team's getting in late the night before. But an interesting kind of wrinkle into Game 3 of Florida getting in there a little bit late last night.
Yeah, I think there were ground stops at the airport in Fort Lauderdale until late afternoon yesterday because of this huge storm that, if I recall correctly, dumped 10 inches of rain in some places.
It's been bad.
So the Panthers made the choice, instead of flying to Edmonton on Tuesday, they gave them a day off at home. They practiced yesterday before attempting to fly to Alberta. And you're right, I don't think they landed until after 8 p.m. local time in Edmonton. And that's not a short flight. I'm going to guess it's about 6 hours, five to 6 hours. So it will be interesting to see And the other thing you have to keep in mind as well, because of the mountain time that Edmonton is on, the game starts at 6 local, yeah, as opposed to 7 local, exactly, for the Panthers. So it actually starts earlier, so they have less time. I read that this is the first game for the Panthers outside of the Eastern time zone since, I believe, March 12th.
That's pretty wild.
So it's been 3 months since they had to play outside of their own time zone. So, yeah, I mean, that will definitely be a storyline heading into the game. And if the Panthers struggle, plenty of people will be talking about the impact the travel had on the situation.
I'm pulling for Edmonton. I want to see a longer series. So if Edmonton won both of these at home and evened this up, I would not be sad about it. You know, I believe that Florida is the better team, and I think Florida is ultimately going to win. And I thought that heading into the series. But I would like to see Edmonton at home even this thing up and give it a best of three after that.
If I read correctly, the past 14 times that a Stanley Cup final was 2-0, the team that was down won Game 3 11 times. So 11 out of the 14 made it 2-1 instead of 3-0.
The Nashville Predators did that in,
yes,
2017.
They did. And the last time a team came back from a 2-0 deficit in the final to win was the Boston Bruins. They did it in 2011. They were down 2-0. They won in 7 games. Since then, there have been 7 Stanley Cup final series that have gone to a 2-0 series, a 2-0 series lead, and all 7 teams have won.
Yeah.
So history suggests that the Panthers will win the series, but I, like you, would like to see Edmonton get this one. 2-1 feels a lot different. Like, if they were to lose tonight and win and make it 3-1 heading back to Florida, it feels different than if they make it 2-1 tonight. So I would like to see Edmonton win as well to make it a more interesting series.
We are off and running on Robbie and Rex Show. Again, we're out here live today at Duncan 326 Harding Place in South Nashville. We'll be out here all show long. Coffee, donuts, giveaways. We got it all out here. Come see us at 326 Harding Place. We'll get to Zach Lyons from Football and Other F Words coming up at 7 o'clock. Get into all things Tennessee Titans. Coming up next, we'll take a look, an early look, at free agency for the Nashville Predators. Who should the Predators be interested in bringing back? Who should they let go? We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are live out at Duncan, 326 Harding Place, all show long. Come on out, get your coffee, get your donuts. We'll be out here all show long. Nick Kieser, back from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So, free agency right around the corner for the Nashville Predators. We've talked a lot about potential targets that are not on their team that they could go add, whether that's via trade, whether that's via free agency, and some of the headlining names that are scheduled at this point to become a free agent. What about players that they already have? So looking at their roster, there's, as you mentioned yesterday, Adam, there's not a ton of big decisions that the Predators have to make with their own roster this offseason. Obviously, everybody's going to be paying attention to what happens with UC Saros, but UC Saros even is not a free agent. I mean, he's still got 1 year left on his deal, so the Predators don't have to do anything with him this offseason. Anthony Beauvillier is an unrestricted free agent. Kiefer Sherwood, Jason Zucker, those are your forwards that are unrestricted. On defense, Tyson Barrie, which I think we would all believe going to be out of here, and then Alex Carrier on defense, your unrestricted free agents, and then Kevin Lankinen in goal. So, Adam, as you look at the unrestricted free agents that they've got coming up, which, by the way, Jared Anderson Dolan is restricted. That's about it for the Nashville Predators in terms of the decisions they got to make on their NHL roster. Of those unrestricted options, who would you like to see maybe back for the Predators next year, and who do you think it's time to move on from if you're Barry Trotz with the guys that are scheduled to become unrestricted free agents?
All right, so let's start it forward. Anthony Beauvillier. I was largely unimpressed with Anthony Beauvillier.
I would agree.
He had some moments, but there's a reason I think he played for 3 teams this season.
That is
right.
Correct.
He started in Vancouver, then to Chicago. Was it Vancouver, Chicago, Nashville?
That is correct.
Okay, so you play for 3 teams in 1 season. That sets on. Oop, there goes an airplane.
Maybe it's Florida Panthers. Who knows?
It might be the Florida Panthers. anyway, Anthony Beauvillier, 3 teams in 1 season, that usually he says something about, you know, your ability to play, with all due respect. So I can't imagine him back. Kiefer Sherwood, I see a role for him on this team. He was an everyday player for the Predators. He was a part of their identity line with Cole Smith and Michael McCarron. He won't be expensive to bring back. You can bring him back at a relatively low price. So I think if they can work out a fair deal, I wouldn't mind Kiefer Sherwood being back. And Zucker's an interesting one, because I really liked what Jason Zucker brought in the postseason. I thought he may have been – you can make an argument that Jason Zucker was the most noticeable forward on the ice for the Predators in their first-round series against the Canucks.
Yep.
And if you're looking to replace the leadership of Ryan McDonagh, Zucker, I think, can help fill that void. Now, Zucker does not have the trophy case that Ryan McDonagh has, but, you know, a well-respected veteran. So if you could come up with a fair deal for Zucker, I think he could be of benefit to this team. So of the three forwards, and then I'll ask for your opinion, Robbie, of the three forwards that are unrestricted free agents, I would let go of Anthony Beauvillier and consider re-signing Sherwood and Zucker.
Yeah, Beauvillier, to me, I understand that he played for Barry Trotz on the island, and that he had some big moments in the playoffs for them. But he did nothing with the Predators that would convince me to bring him back. He would not be expensive. Like, it wouldn't. It's not like it would cost you a lot to bring him back. But I just think you're better served moving on and bringing some other guys up. The Zucker one is interesting because I like the player. I like the leadership. I like the veteran presence. Everything you talked about, I like. I wonder what the price is going to be with him. I mean, I think he was getting paid around $5 million his last contract, if memory serves me correctly.
They had to pay, to be fair. I think that's – I'll look right now. To be fair, when you're the Arizona Coyotes, he made $5.3 million on a one-year contract. So when you're the Arizona Coyotes –
You got to overpay a little bit
considering their situation, and we know how that's worked out, the fact that they're no longer the Arizona Coyotes. So I think you have to overpay to get guys to come to Arizona. So I don't think he's a $5.3 million player anymore.
No way. And you know, he's 32, so there's that part of it as well. I'm not 100% opposed to bringing Zucker back. I think if you're bringing him back with the idea that he's going to play in your top six, that would be a mistake. Like, that to me, if you're going to add this offseason, like, I'd rather see them go spend some money in free agency for a younger guy to play in the top six than I would bringing back Jason Zucker. Now, you can do both. They've got enough room to do both if they want to. They've got $26 million in cap space. The Sherwood one, I'm totally with you in terms of he would not be expensive, and he certainly carved out a role for himself last year. My question to that would be, like, is Kiefer Sherwood's role irreplaceable? Like,
no,
could,
it's not.
I'm looking at this roster and trying to identify potential spots to get younger. And Kiefer Sherwood's not old. I mean, he's 29. But, like, Zach LaRue. Let's say Zach LaRue has a good camp, and he was incredibly impressive in the AHL playoffs. And maybe he's not ready to play in the league. I don't know. But, like, to me, like, Zach LaRue should be eyeing, like, Kiefer Sherwood's spot, right? Mm-hmm. Like, coming into the league.
Yeah.
So, like, I think one question you got to ask yourself, and Barry Trotz seemed like at the end of the season he was all on board with bringing Kiefer Sherwood back, which I understand it. Like, Sherwood carved out a nice role for himself, and he's not going to be expensive. But, like, shouldn't, like, one of your younger guys be ready at this point, whether it's LaRue, whether it's Afanasyev? Like, shouldn't somebody be ready to take that spot? That would be my only hesitation there.
No, I completely understand that. And you're right. Like, if you're looking for a roster spot, I should say, for one of those younger forwards, Sherwood's spot would be one of the ones I would circle. So you're right. If you feel that you can get equal or surplus value from one of those players versus Sherwood and what you would have to sign to get him, I could totally see that. And look, Sherwood, you know, is fine. He's a fine NHL role player. You know, as you said, I agree. He is not irreplaceable. I think we can both skip over Tyson Barrie. We know he's not coming back. He did not want to be here. Here comes another airplane. Maybe that's Tyson Berry leaving Nashville.
Could be.
It could be. So the two interesting ones, well, actually, we should give credit to our dear friend Nick Kieser, who tweeted the other day, it might have been yesterday, actually, that it appears unlikely that Kevin Lankinen will return to the Nashville Predators. It appears he will be testing free agency, at least.
Which is not surprising.
Do I have that right, Nick? Is Nick listening?
Nick's probably not. He's probably not listening.
No, I gave him a shout-out on the air, and he's not even listening. Anyway,
sorry, Adam. What's up?
I just gave you credit for your report on Kevin Lankinen.
Oh.
I wanted to make sure that I expressed it correctly, he's unlikely to return and will test free agency.
He will not be coming back. I do not believe he'll be coming back. That is not very likely. The Predators probably don't think it's advantageous to keep him. And for Kevin's sake, it doesn't sound like it's in his best interest to be with the Predators, considering they do have a young Askarov, assuming he's going to be ready for next year.
Yeah, so there. So there's the report straight from the reporter. So that'll be interesting, too. I mean, does that mean that you can pencil in Yaroslav Askarov onto the depth chart, or do the Predators look for another veteran goalie like Kevin Lankinen to play backup for a year or two behind UC Saros, again, assuming that UC Saros is re-signed? Of course, UC Saros is under contract for next season, but I digress. The interesting one for me is Alex Carrier.
Agreed.
Because, you know, I feel like if he would have been, if they wanted him back, he would have been back by now.
Yeah.
And now things obviously can change, and you know, he and Jeremy Lauzon, if I'm not mistaken, they were playing really tough minutes throughout the season. And I thought Carrier did a good job of that. And I think Carrier has done a good job over the past number of years handling tough minutes.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly, he was playing a lot with Matthias Ekholm before Ekholm was traded. And Ekholm would regularly handle the top competition. So Carrier, by default, was also handling top competition. So Carrier is really interesting. I'm not sure, like, I don't know what that contract would look like, what his cap hit would be, whether or not they even want him back, if they would rather sign someone in free agency to replace Ryan McDonough, and they would have to replace him as well, Carrier, that I should say. So what do you think? I mean, it's a really interesting discussion around Carrier. He's the one that is the most intriguing of this group.
I think on defense, obviously, Yossi, I think, is for sure going to be back.
Obviously.
Luke Shen is for sure going to be back.
Yes.
Lauzon, I think, is for sure going to be back, and Spencer Stastny is for sure going to be on the team. Like I think Spencer Stastny is making the team out of camp next season. So you have, beyond that, Dante Favreau is under contract. Now I'm still going to leave open a possibility of maybe him being moved this offseason, but we'll see. He's under contract next year, so there is room for Carrier. Now I think the Predators need to get a little bit bigger back there, and I think you're going to see them attempt to replace McDonough. Like, there's all sorts of noise about Brett Pesce right now. Like, could the Predators be interested in Brett Pesce? Could they be interested in maybe like a Brady Shea, Brandon Montour? Like, there's going to be interesting names that become available on the free agent market this offseason. So do the Predators, have they identified a player or two that's going to be in free agency on defense that they are more intrigued by than Carrier? Like, Carrier, I think, was good last year. He and Lauzon were fine together. So if they brought him back, I don't think it would be overly expensive. And he's a good player. But I'm kind of with you. It's a little bit surprising to me, if he was going to be back, that the deal isn't done by now. I thought if they wanted to get it done, maybe it would get done around the deadline. It hasn't been done to this point. So, look, they've still got time. There's a few weeks here before free agency, but I'm starting to lean towards, just based on number one, the fact he's not signed yet, and number two, just the reported intrigue that the Predators have and some of these other defensemen that could be available, I'm starting to think that starting to lean towards him not coming back.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see what he would get on the free agent market if he does not re-sign with the Predators. I mean, because someone will scoop him up. He's a good player.
He's a good player.
I wonder what his contract looks like, what that cap hit looks like, because It won't be a lot in the grand scheme of the cap in terms of the percentage of the cap that it takes up, but it'll be interesting to see how other teams value Alexander Carrier, because, of course, he's been with the Predators his entire career. And, you know, how long he's been in the organization for such a long time. Like, because it took him a while to crack the NHL lineup. He was in the American League for a long time. If I recall correctly, he was the captain of the Milwaukee Admirals at one point.
Yep.
So, you know, he's made an impact in this organization for a very long time. But I'm interested to see, if he doesn't come back, what his market is.
Got drafted in 2015. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. More of your thoughts on the Predators and free agency coming up next. Who should the Predators retain? Who should the Predators let go? We'll have the best and worst things in sports coming up at 645. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. We are live at Dunkin', 326 Harding Place. Coming out, get your coffee, get your donuts. We'll be out here all show long on Robbie and Rex Road. We're taking your thoughts right now on the Nashville Predators and free agency. Coming up here in just a couple of weeks, who should the Predators sign? Who should the Predators retain? Who should the Predators let go? Taking your thoughts on all that. Ryan in Nashville says, re-sign all the young guys, Jason Zucker and Lankinen. And that's it. This is from Ryan from Nashville on the text line. The Lankinen part of this, like, I think in a perfect world, the Predators would really like to have him back. I don't think it makes a ton of sense for Lankinen unless he knows that he's getting a bigger role here. And if Saros is the goalie, which we all believe he's going to be heading into next season, then Lankinen's not going to have a bigger role here. It just is what it is. So I think Lankinen feels like he has proven that he can be a starting goalie again in the league. Now, can he be an effective starting goalie? I don't know. Like, I think he did really well in his role here, and I think the Predators would certainly like to have him back. I understand from his perspective it makes sense to look elsewhere for more opportunities, more playing time. I don't know that there's a role out there that's going to be available for him as a starter, Adam, but if he could land himself into like a 1A, 1B situation, that's probably the ideal spot for Kevin Lankinen and wherever that would be.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what teams could use that. I mean, my gut just tells me that you'll probably have to play for a team that's
not very good.
Not very good.
Yeah.
Like, if he, I mean, like, I'm just throwing in, I don't know what their situation is, but like San Jose.
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
Right? Like, yep. If you know, you could probably start for the Sharks or get a lot more starts for the Sharks. But the Sharks are not very good.
They're not.
So you have to take that into account as a goaltender or any player when you're considering playing time, of course. I mean, I think of some of the other goalies that could be available in free agency, and a lot of them fit that Lankinen style, that 1B goalie with some starting experience, like Cam Talbot in Los Angeles, Laurent Brossoit in Winnipeg.
Samsonov,
Ilya Samsonov in Toronto. None of them, you know. I mean, I actually do like Brossoit quite a bit.
Yeah, he's been great the last couple years as a backup in Winnipeg.
And before that, he played well in Vegas too. So, you know, it seems that if Lankinen is coming back, it seems to make the most sense to just bring Askarov up. No,
I would agree.
So that seems to be the path of least resistance.
Yeah, no question. So Corey Curtis on my personal text line asking about Nikita Zadorov as a potential add for the Predators. We were going through the Carrier stuff. Could the Predators add on defense? You know, we've talked about Brett Pesce. We've talked about Brady Shea and the Carolina defenseman that could become available. What do you make of the Zadorov part of this? Obviously, the Predators got a front row seat to Zadorov in the playoff series against Vancouver. He's very big. He's very physical, and he can move well enough where he doesn't get torched out there. And look, from my perspective, like a media perspective, the dude's got an unbelievable personality, so it would be awesome if he was here. But I think Barry Trotz does want to get bigger on the back end. Zadorov would definitely qualify for that. What do you make of a potential Nikita Zadorov fascination for the Nashville Predators?
Here's a fun fact for you. There's only one player who played in the regular season who weighs more than Nikita Zadorov. So Nikita Zadorov is 248 pounds. He's 6'6", 248 pounds. The only player bigger in terms of weight was Jamie Oleksiak, the Kraken defenseman. He is 6'7", 257 pounds. So Zadorov literally is one of the biggest players in the NHL.
Tank.
He is a huge guy, and you're right, really good personality. You know, he's become a fan favorite wherever he's gone. And you're right, the Predators got a first-hand look at how effective he could be. He had a really good playoff. I thought he also continued to play well in the second round against Edmonton. And this is where you kind of get in trouble when you're a team. I mean, it was the perfect time for Zadorov to play like that. Contract year in the postseason. That's the best time to have your best stuff.
Yep.
The problem is the player he was, particularly goal scoring. He's not a goal scorer.
Nope.
But he scored a lot of goals in the playoffs. I think he led Canucks defensemen in goals during their two playoff rounds. That's not his game. So if you're a GM, sometimes you can get fooled into thinking that a player is better than he actually is when he plays on an expiring contract in the playoffs.
Yep.
So, I mean, Zadorov was a third-pairing defenseman for the Canucks. He played on the left side of the third pair with Tyler Myers, another large human being. That's one thing to keep in mind. He's left-handed. So if you're looking for someone to play with Roman Josi, probably not going to be Zadorov because they're both left-handed. I like Zadorov as a player. I like what he brings. I like the size. As you said, I think he's a better skater than you would think for someone as big as he is.
He might get overpaid this offseason.
He is absolutely going to get overpaid this offseason. And I would be wary of signing Zadorov after having the postseason that he did, because I do not believe, particularly offensively, that is sustainable. But you know what you're getting with him generally. Throws huge hits, can get the puck up ice.
Protect the middle.
He's nasty on the ice. He's definitely an old school player in a lot of respects. So I like the player. I would be very cautious about. I think when you look at the best and worst contract lists after free agency, I'm fairly certain Zadorov will be on the list of worst contract signs after free agency.
The idea, you bring up somebody playing with Josi. They obviously need that because, like, Josi and Favreau were together, you know, fairly regularly at different points last year. It's fine. Like, Favreau, I think, is fine. I don't know that Favreau needs to be playing, you know, top-pairing minutes with Roman Josi. And in different situations, even if Favreau and Josi started the game together, a lot of times they'd move McDonough up with Josi in different situations throughout the game. Obviously, McDonough's gone now. So I think they need somebody to play with Josi. I think, and you tell me if you agree or disagree, like in terms of the options that could be on the table for them, I think Brett Pesce feels that to a T.
Yes.
He's a stay-at-home defenseman. He's a right-handed shot. He allows Josi, not that, you know, it's not the same system. Yossi's not, you know, going 200 feet from coast to coast all the time in the system under Andrew Brunette anymore. But I just think a defensive shutdown type defenseman is something that he needs to play with. And I think Pesce fits the bill perfectly.
Yes, and I've talked about this a lot with Willie. I think we both agree that Pesce, from a profile standpoint, in terms of what he brings, I think he would be an excellent fit next to Roman Josi for all the reasons you described. He is more of a defensive-minded defenseman. You know, he's not going to put up a lot of points, but that's not why you're paying him. You know, good stick, good positioning. Now, the question always is when you take a defenseman out of Carolina is, well, is he good because he plays in such a good defensive system?
Right.
Or is he that good? And with Pesce, I think it's the latter. I think he certainly, like all Hurricanes defensemen benefit for playing for Rod Brendamore, but I do think that he is just a good defenseman in general. And I would, you know, with all free agency contracts, there's going to be a bit of buyer beware.
Yeah.
And, Pesce, how old is he? 29?
I believe.
29 or 30?
He is 29.
Right. I like Pesce a lot as a Roman Josi partner. I think they would complement each other very well. I don't know how much Pesce would cost. I'm sure there would be a big market for him because he is highly respected. But I really like that fit. If you're looking for someone who can bring offense underneath the top pair, I talked about this as well with Willie. I like Brady Shea quite a lot. I prefer him over Brandon Montour. And, you know, for two reasons, as I explained to Willie a couple weeks ago. One, Shea kills penalties. Montour doesn't. So you get that. And the other thing is Shea has been incredibly productive offensively while receiving little power play time.
Yep.
Because Brent Burns gets a lot of the power play time for the defenseman in Carolina. I think this is what it was. Over the past two seasons, the only defensemen that have scored more even strength goals than Brady Shea are Erik Karlsson and Cale Makar. He has as many even strength goals. He has as many even strength goals over the past two seasons as Roman Josi. So
you'll take
like,
that.
I like Shea a lot as like a secondary offensive option on the blue line.
Very interesting. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, it is time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your best things, your worst things on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
The best and worst of the sports week, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
On ESPN.
1025, The Game, and The Game Nashville app.
It's time!
This is the worst.
You look like you're feeling sorry for yourself.
I believe in miracles, yes! Unbelievable.
He's one of one. He is him.
This is a Coke bottle, it's not a crystal ball.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Okay, let's go.
It is that time of the week. Time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your best things, your worst things on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad continuing to be on vacation. So, Adam, in honor of you being in Rexroad spot, you kick us off with your best and worst things in the world of sports.
All right. So, yesterday we went off the air discussing the travesty that is Joey Chestnut being banned from the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating competition because he signed an endorsement deal with a rival brand, Impossible Meats, a plant-based meat company. Well, not too long after we got off the air yesterday, there was a major announcement.
There was.
From Netflix. A rivalry simmering for 15 years. Joey Chestnut. Kobayashi. Unfinished beef.
Now we're talking.
The ultimate hot dog eating competition live on Netflix on Labor Day.
Now we're talking.
So remember, Kobayashi won the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest from 2001 to 2006.
Oh, yeah.
And then Chestnut won his first title in 2007 and has been dominating the game ever since. So the two of them will compete for the first time, I think, since then in a hot dog eating contest.
Correct.
On Labor Day. And this was a statement from Kobayashi in conjunction with the announcement. Quote, retiring for me will only happen after I take him down one last time.
Now we're talking.
This rivalry has been brewing for a long time. Competing against Joey live on Netflix means fans all over the world can watch me knock him out.
Wow.
So we lost Joey Chestnut. We gained the greatest hot dog eating rivalry that we ever have known. Chestnut versus Kobayashi.
Man,
Labor
like
Day on Netflix.
Feels
so
like
that is my best thing in sports, that we will see Joey Chestnut compete in a hot dog eating competition after all.
I like it.
My worst thing in sports is something we've touched on a couple of times over the past couple of days, and we've already used this website on this show during two segments.
We have.
Cap Friendly, the wonderful hockey website, is shuttering its doors publicly because the Washington Capitals purchased the website and will be taking it private. The plan is for it to stay public until after the draft and free agency. So sometime in early to mid-July, the website will go dark. Cap Friendly has been a fantastic source for all hockey people, fans, reporters, teams, agents, for 10 years, and it will really suck that it won't be on any, that it won't be available to us anymore. So the worst thing in sports, the Capitals buying Cap Friendly, we need to take care of it and use it while we can.
There we go. Nick Kieser, your best and worst things in the world of sports.
I'll start with the Tennessee Volunteers getting prime time against Florida State coming up on Friday. I'm excited for that one, guys, because I remember last week, I just kept thinking to myself, are they going to get a shot are they going to get through without any losses? And obviously, Rex Rowe got dunked on the entire weekend after that one loss. Another plane. Anyway, so I'm interested to see what they're able to do on Friday evening under the lights up there in Omaha. So they have deserved the spotlight. I think it's been fun to see what Tony Vitello has had to say as well. He's been fired up ever since they lost that game against Evansville. Worst in sports, I would say Jerry West obviously passing away yesterday. Yeah. Absolutely sucks. Obviously, you guys mentioned Cap Friendly. Another thing that sucks from last night, Luka Doncic obviously bitching about the refereeing, which is quite frankly the story of the series now. Brian Windhorst had a great rant last night about that. So, yeah, a couple things on the worst. So, Robbie, what you got?
Well, since you've named off every worst thing that's happened this week, I guess I need to come up with some other worst stuff. My best thing is the U.S. Open beginning today. Scottie Scheffler going for another major. He is the betting favorite to win the U.S. Open. This is the Masters is my favorite golf tournament. I think U.S. Open is number two for no other reason that this is the one golf tournament where some of the best players in the world at times look like me out there because it's so hard, and they make this course there at Pinehurst this week. It's going to be pretty difficult. Like the greens are basically like concrete. I mean, it's very difficult to putt, very difficult to score well in this tournament. So I'm excited for the U.S. Open coming up. No, we'll see if Tiger can put together a solid weekend starting today. And then Scheffler right now, he's on a pretty amazing run. Other than being incarcerated and having a child, it's been a lot of winning for Scottie Scheffler recently. So interested to see if he can win his third major and capture his first U.S. Open title later this weekend. So all eyes from me going to be on the U.S. Open. My worst thing in sports, we mentioned it to start the show, NBA playoffs have just been bad. NBA playoffs have been really, at times, rough to watch. The Denver-Minnesota series was good because it went seven games. But even in the series, a lot of the games weren't very good. Like, they weren't very compelling games. There were a lot of blowouts in that series. The Knicks and the Pacers, kind of the same way, went seven games. But a lot of blowouts in that series, too.
And a lot of injuries for the Knicks. Yeah, exactly. They were incredibly shorthanded by the end of that series.
They were. And it's just – it's not been a great playoff. And, look, it's kind of a – we're in the middle of a changing of the guard in the NBA anyway. You know, for the last decade plus, it's been either Steph Curry and the Warriors out there dominating, LeBron with the Heat, LeBron with the Cavs, LeBron with the Lakers – I mean, there's been a lot of kind of the same cast and crew going to the finals. And it is cool that the last few years there's some new blood in there, but it's been a rough NBA playoffs to watch. And the final, I mean, Celtics are up 3-0. Even if they don't close it out in game four, like, it's over. Like, it's over. So it's going to be one of the more underwhelming NBA playoffs that I can remember. Trent on the text line says the worst for him, also the NBA Finals. I got another texter that says, I've never protested anything in my life, but that's about to change. I will not watch a second of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Competition on the 4th of July anymore without Joey Chestnut. Texter's had enough.
Well, I said yesterday what needs to happen is Joey Chestnut needs to set up a table right outside the boundaries of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, which, of course, takes place on Coney Island, New York, every July 4th.
Yeah.
And just eat at the same time as the actual competition and then claim, you know, his unofficial win. I mean, there's intrigue in the fact that, like, who's going to win now, right?
Yeah.
But part of the appeal of the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest is watching Joey Chestnut. I mean, he doesn't look like he's enjoying it. The faces he makes while he's doing it are not enjoyable.
I don't know how you could. But
I've told this story on the air multiple times, but I'll refresh it. One of the most jarring experiences of my life was encountering Joey Chestnut in the wild in San Jose, which I don't know if he still lives there, but he lived there at the time. When I was there for a Predators-Sharks game, I saw him eating dinner with a knife and fork. It was one of the most jarring things I've ever seen. Like, I didn't realize he could eat in any other way than the way he eats hot dogs. So, but Kobayashi versus Chestnut, Labor Day, that'll be, you know, Netflix. Kudos to Netflix for jumping on that opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, I there's enough intrigue for me there to turn it on.
Alex on the text line, are you guys at the end of a runway? It sounds like the planes are taking off directly over you. Have you seen The Dark Knight?
Not in a long time.
There's a scene in there where Morgan Freeman's talking about Skyhook, where they basically just like raise a chute up in the air and the plane hooks the chute and takes Batman out of there. I'm not ruining anything. If we put a Skyhook chute directly over the top of us right now, we would get yanked off into oblivion by an airplane. I mean, right over the top.
Yes, we there's no shortage. We've had planes and automobiles. We're just missing trains.
Yep.
So maybe a train will find a way to drive down Harding Place here. But come see us and all of the airplanes.
At
326 Harding Place, Dunkin' Donuts. It's filling up. It's got lots of giveaways.
A lot of people here.
A lot of people here. So come see us and come experience the flight path.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Zach Lyons from Football and Other F-Words. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.